Hello, Chris Graham here, and it's been a little while since I've done a podcast, and we're going to do something here today, or start something here today anyway, a little different, at least on a weekly basis. I've always wanted to do something, and I'll never be invited to do one, so I'm just going to start doing them here in my own version of a TED Talk. I was thinking about this the other day when I was doing some yard work of all things, you know, when you're out. For me, whether it's yard work and you're out and doing some physical labor like that, or maybe out when I'm doing a run or a bike ride, and you're away from the computer and your mind just gets to think about lots of different things. And I went through the first of a few. In fact, I started kind of taking mental notes on some things I could do in-depth talks on that maybe could share some knowledge. And you know, the first one that came to mind. Probably the most obvious for me. Whatever I would be an expert in, it would probably be the media business. Having worked in the media business for now 25 years, starting back, it'll be officially the 26th year of my career, starting September 1st. So we're finishing up my 25th year. I started September 1st of 1995 as a part-time sports stringer at the News Virginian in Waynesboro, Virginia. I smile when I say that. My career as a journalist was very much an accident. 1995, I was a year out of college, and I was on the wait list to get into a creative writing program at the University of Virginia. And after dropping out of law school, I had oriented my entire academic career from about seventh grade on to being a law student. And then I got to law school and realized I don't want to be a law student. I don't want to do this. And so kind of bounced around a bit, did some substitute teaching, tutoring. I was a math tutor of all things. I was very much in demand, as it turned out, at that time for tutoring in math, all the way from everything from middle school math up to calculus. I had quite a few clients that I helped through math classes in that year, trying to just get my way through. And I remember thinking a few times during that period of time, as I was waiting to get into creative writing MFA program at UVA, that I just wish I could figure out a way to marshal my skills such as they are, and my main skills are intelligent and witty conversation. That was sort of my code word to myself for whatever it was I could do in the world. So there was an ad in the local paper, the News Virginia newspaper, that I'd grown up reading. I grew up reading that paper. I'm from the Waynesboro area originally. So I've been here all my life. And there was an ad for a part-time sports writer. I thought, well, gosh, man, I'm not, sports, that's right up my alley. I could do that. You know, in the meantime, I could, balance that out with some substitute teaching and some tutoring and cobble together some money until creative writing MFA program opens up the spot for me. I went and interviewed my first day at September 1st. It was Friday night. I answered phones and took up out of town football games over the phone, and wrote stories on them. And I remember, when I submitted my first couple of game stories from games I'd not been at, and the assistant sports editor said, after reading the pieces I've submitted, wow, you're gonna be pretty good at this. I ended up never going to the MFA program at UVA, and stayed in journalism. Eventually talked my way into a job covering politics for that newspaper, and stayed there for 5 years. And then I met my eventual wife, Crystal Graham, while we were still both working there at the News Virginian. And then we went to a weekly paper in Charlottesville that no longer exists, called The Observer, for a couple of years. And then in 2002, we launched Augusta Free Press. I kind of hastened over one part of the development of Augusta Free Press, actually two parts of the development of Augusta Free Press. One, my first year at the News Virginian in the news department, the publisher at the time convened weekly staff meetings with each department, ad staff, I'm sure, and then the production folks, and then the newsroom. And our weekly meeting in the newsroom, I remember I was precocious, to say the least. you know, when it came time for, hey, suggestions from the crowd, what ideas do you have for helping improve the product? And I would say things like, well, you know, we should develop a relationship with a local radio station. We should develop a relationship with a local TV station. We should launch a website. All these, you know, kinds of ideas. And the publisher was an old school guy. God love him. You know, been in the business for a long, long time. I'm 23 years old. And the answer was, son, we're the newspaper. We are the hegemon here in this community in terms of media. We don't need TV and radio. They need us. And so we don't need a website. This internet's going to be a fad. And so ideas shot down. Here we are all these years later, 25 years later, talking in local newspapers are every day going out of print. I'm not saying I was an expert. I probably was pushing myself as much as anything else, to be honest. The other part of the story is that as a young reporter, I was assigned by the at that time managing editor to work on a sort of an investigative piece looking at the and this is in 1995 and then in 1996 looking at the influx of Latinos into the Waynesboro community. You know, Waynesboro is definitely now in 2020 a very different community than it was in 1995. There were very few Latino residents then, and but they were becoming, you know, it was noticeably growing with the influx of what used to be day laborers, what used to be the more agricultural seasonal workers, then just kind of settling in the region. And I was assigned to kind of look into that and kind of examine all the aspects of impact on the school system, on social services, on local law enforcement, you know, the religious community. And it was interesting, you know, being the young reporter, I eventually produced a series of stories. It was an 8-part series. It was heavily vetted and even advertised. You know, back then the News Virginian was a 6-day-a-week paper, and 5 days of the week, Monday through Friday, was published as an afternoon paper, which meant that deadline was 11 o'clock in the morning. It rolled off the press at noon, and it was thrown out in people's yards and delivered at other means, basically in time for people to get home from work and read the day's news later in the day. The News Leader had always been the morning paper, which meant it had a deadline of 11 p.m. with a rollout after midnight. Whatever advantage we had was that we could give you the updated news we had the morning to kind of capture whatever had happened since. So that was sort of the give and play between the two local papers in this month. And so Friday morning, Friday afternoon, as the paper rolled off the presses, the story that I had written was advertised. Hey, the series is going to start in Saturday morning's paper. Now, that was the only thing. We didn't have a Sunday paper at the time. And we did have our Saturday paper, the weekend paper, came out Saturday morning. And it had all the advertising circulars and everything else in it. And so Friday, it's advertised. The series is coming. And then interesting, there was some sort of a backlash. Apparently, some local business community type leaders didn't want what appeared from the way the series was advertised as a sympathetic look, a reasoned look at the influx of Latinos in the community. There were complaints that we would be harboring illegal immigrants, and that wasn't looked at in this series from, you know, what the look was. So I guess I could say, long story short, the story was on the page around 10 o'clock that night. By 11 o'clock, it was off the page, and it was never to run in the News Virginian. I resigned. I ended up going back about, this was in June. I went back the next February. So I took about 8 months off. And I eventually published the series myself, and I had to pay for the print run. That was fun. I didn't have any money. I went back for a few months into tutoring and various things, and substitute teaching, and used the little bit of money there to print 500 copies of this the series of stories, and I decided to name the publication that would publish this the Augusta Free Press. That's where it started, 1996. 500 copies of a tabloid-sized newspaper, and I don't even have one around. I regret that I don't, and I don't have a digital copy of it. I didn't know how to save that. I taught myself layout enough to be able to get this to work, and paid the bill and drove them around and put them in places, and just, you know, just I was just a community journalist. And that was the first iteration of Augusta Free Press. Fast forward to 2002, we leave, my wife and I, Crystal, leave the Observer, and we start the Augusta Free Press online. And it's interesting because the idea when we started Augusta Free Press as the second iteration in 2002 was to use the online version to launch another print version. That was what we were thinking then. It's 2002, you know, even though I was the smart guy, at least I thought I was, saying that the News Virginian, when I worked there, needed to have a website and needed to have relationships with TV and radio. I still didn't see that you could make a viable business out of the internet. I thought that was a compliment, not the business. And so our goal with the AugustaFreePress.com that we launched in July of 2002 was to use it to launch a print paper. And we went out and we wrote business plans and sought investors, and nobody saw what we saw. Maybe it's fortunate for us they didn't. We didn't have anybody telling us what we needed to do with their money, but no one saw what we saw. No one saw the potential for what we thought we could see. And so Augusta Free Press launched with no budget, no money, no advertising. And I was back to square one, or square zero as the case may be. Crystal got a job with a book publishing company, and I ran Augusta Free Press such as it was. We just hoped to make it a month, then we hoped to make it 2 months, then we hoped to make it 3 months. And we kept making it. You know, the first time I think we kind of realized that maybe we weren't going to be a print publication, but this was a good thing, was about a year later, 2003. A gentleman from Kashmir, the disputed Middle Eastern territory in dispute between India and Pakistan as to who has sovereignty over that portion of property, came to speak at a church in Waynesboro. And, you know, me being a University of Virginia government and foreign affairs graduate, I was very interested in the story. I mean, it's a local story. And somebody was in Waynesboro speaking at a church, and then I interviewed this gentleman and wrote a story. And then, you know, I'm thinking, I'm still thinking, I'm writing for a Waynesboro audience. You know, when you write for a local newspaper, you're writing for your local audience, right? And then the comment section on this story on the website had generated interest worldwide, and people all over the place. I could tell, you know, based on the verbiage, but also the IP addresses, it was worldwide. And I wrote this for people in Waynesboro to read, and it got a worldwide audience. So that opened our eyes a bit. About a year later, 2004, it was sometime in 2004, but I'm not sure if it was exactly a year later, but it was definitely the next year, 2004. Again, I'm still in the mindset that I'm writing for a local audience. So, you think about when 2004 was the last year of the first term of the Bush administration. And one of the signature acts of the Bush administration first term was, at least domestically, was the No Child Left Behind Act, the education policy. So a local delegation led by Steve Landis, then a member of the House delegates, and Emmett Hanger, still a member of the Virginia State Senate from the Shenandoah Valley, they were going to D.C. as part of a state delegation, Virginia delegation, to talk with the then Education Secretary Rod Paige about No Child Left Behind, specifically about Virginia's interest in being opted out, because Virginia had a preceding program called Standards of Learning that Virginia felt was a better program. And so Virginia was looking to get some leniency from the Department of Education as to the standards under No Child Left Behind. And so, and it was a, it got pretty fiery between the state and feds. And it's interesting because Emmett Hanger and Steve Landis, both Republicans, now Virginia then was, the governor was Mark Warner, a Democrat. But this General Assembly was dominated by both majorities in House and Senate were Republicans. So this was an intra-Republican party battle, if you want to say, but it was also a state-federal battle. So I interviewed Emmett and interviewed Steve Landis as they were, you know, ready to make their way up. This is the kind of thing a journalist, local journalist does. You know, I know they're going to go meet with the education secretary. Let's get them on the record about what they're going to meet about. And I remember Emmett had some particularly fiery comments about the upcoming meeting. I got feedback after the meeting. So I wrote my story. They went and met, and I called them back afterwards. Hey, how did it go? And Emmett says, "Wow, Chris, your Augusta Free Press has greater reach than you assume." And I'm still being dragged into this perimeter of wisdom. Augusta Free Press, you know, oh yeah, the education secretary had read our article, and boy, he was fired up. So I found out, you know, a year earlier, you know, with the India-Pakistan-Kashmir issue, I found out in 2004 that the education secretary reads Augusta Free Press, or at least found a story about it that are written by Augusta Free Press. And we're still trying to figure out how to make money at this, but it's got reach. And, you know, I remember if Tucker Martin, if you're watching this, you may remember this. Tucker Martin is a political communications consultant, has been for a long time. And in 2005, I first made acquaintance with Tucker. He was working communications for one of the Republican statewide office campaigns, and he was working with a gentleman named Tim Murtaugh, who now works with the President Trump reelection campaign. And it's interesting because Tucker's a Republican, but Tucker is very anti-Trump, and then of course, and they were good buddies. I don't know what the relationship is now, but. And I often was dealing with you know, either of these guys individually a few times as a team. And I remember one time I had them both on the phone on a conference call, and they asked, you know, we were just chatting about various things about the campaign related stuff. And I don't remember which one it was, but I think it was Tucker who said, we have a question, Chris, how do you do this? How do you do Augusta Free Press? Are you just independently wealthy? No. we financed Augusta Free Press the way we did with no money. And coming from humble journalism backgrounds by downsizing significantly. We lived in a trailer park, my wife and I did. The Augusta Free Press's first 5 years were out of a bedroom in a single wide trailer in a trailer park. That's how we kept our standard of living and cost of living very low and made do. We poured ourselves into Augusta Free Press in that way. The biggest challenge we had, aside from advertising, convincing people that, you know, yes, there's people would always say Augusta Free Press. Okay, so what's the paper? You know, I understand there's a website. What's the paper? And explaining to folks, there's no paper. This is it. This is what we have. Both to advertisers, you know, yes, just there's actually more people reading online than people are reading print papers here locally. I could tell them that, I could show them that, but it was hard to get people to believe that. And similarly for the news sources, I guess you could say, like for, you know, the political folks came on board quickly, relatively quickly. You know, the fact that I would, I had the ins with, because having been a veteran, so to speak, I'm still young, but a veteran reporter, you know, it was not hard to get on the call list and media list, email list of various political figures and their staffs. Eventually 2005, I also had a sports background. You know, I'd worked both sides of the spectrum. And so in 2005, we finally, I'd been covering UVA sports, both for the News Virginia and the Observer for years. And Rich Murray, who was then the SID, longtime SID sports information director at the University of Virginia, Virginia Athletics, he credentialed us. And we were among the first two, as I recall, us and the Sabre, which is, you know, still very much in business, that he credentialed to from non-traditional media outlets, traditional being either TV, radio, or print, of course. And I remember, you know, Rich saying, "Hey, Chris, I'm only doing this because I know you. You know, I mean, I know you from the News Virginia. I know you from your time at the Observer And he said, you know, the big fear that they had was that online was primarily about recruiting, and, you know, sports media, college sports media professionals don't want to subject their coaches to having to answer a bunch of questions about recruiting because they're not supposed to talk about recruits until they sign. I mean, there's a, you know, a lot of rigmarole there. And he said, I know you're not going to do that. I know you're here to cover the games. I know you're here to cover the teams and the program. And so, you know, I wouldn't do this for anybody, but I'll do this for you. And so, but it was, you know, there was a battle there, you know, it was, the, you know, both to the advertisers, to the news sources, to the readers, you know, there's no paper. And so, you know, we keep at it, you know, we keep at it and we live cheap, and, you know, the recession of 2008 hits and things really go downhill. We had started, we continued with the idea that we needed to have a print complement. So in 2007, we launched a print magazine called the New Dominion Magazine. And, you know, that the of course you can't foresee a recession and, you know, having big print bills, with a magazine, you know, came to a head, and, you know, we eventually had to discontinue the magazine. It won award. The magazine won awards. We won, as recently, I think it was 2012. We won our magazine competing with big Richmond and you know, Nova and Hampton Roads, outfits. We were number one in general makeup, which is the overall appearance and readability of a magazine. I think it was in 2012, maybe it was 2011. We won the award in 2012 for the year 2011 with our little staff of three, my wife and myself, and then Mark Miller, our photographer. You know, we're competing with publications that had dozens of people working for them. And we were, you know, we were competitive, but it just didn't make money. And the recession really kicked our butts, and we had to adapt a bit. And I think we did well. We launched a side business that for years became the primary driver financially, fiscally for us. Website design marketing, using the same skills that it takes to design a news website, to design print publications that win awards at the state level. And to put the information together, we sold that to clients and made good money at that. And you know, we've come full circle. Now we're back to, we still do some of that work. Crystal, my wife, runs that side of the business. I'm back full time on the news side of the business. But yeah, we actually are viable. And you know, for a while, I would say for the years 2010 to about 2017, maybe 2018. If I had to just do the quick math, I bet 80% of our revenues were revenues that were derived from the marketing side of our business. Augusta Free Press was an expensive hobby, expensive in terms of my time invested, relative to the money made from that time. In the last couple of years, we've probably reversed that. It's probably an 80-20 split in favor of the news business side of things. We've really improved our business, from the news side of things. So, I say all that to say, where we are in 2020 now, you know, in 2020, you know, I look at the local market first. You know, I'm based in Waynesboro, Virginia. We always will be, I'm sure. Waynesboro, the Waynesboro, Stanton, Augusta, market, you know, the metropolitan statistical area, I guess the VEC, the Virginia Employment Commission calls it, is very unique. It's an area of roughly 125,000 people when you add the two cities and the county together. So, you know, not rural. I mean, I live in a city. I'm broadcasting from a podcast studio in a house in a city of 25,000 people. I don't feel very rural. There's cows, but they're probably, you know, 10, 15, 20 miles away from me here, right? It's not like I live in the middle of nowhere, but it's not big either. We're not Richmond. We're not Hampton Roads. We're not Nova. We're 20 miles from Charlottesville. We're 25 miles from Harrisonburg. You know, we're located in the middle of some big things, but we're not huge, but we're not small. Okay, so I say all that. There's still two daily papers that serve this market. The News Virginian based in Waynesboro, the News Leader based in Stanton. I mean, you know, look at Washington has one daily paper, I guess, if unless you count the Examiner, which I don't know if I count, but you know, even if you do, that's two for Washington. But I, you know, the Washington Post certainly is one. For a region, I mean, I don't even know what the population of Southern Maryland is. I know that D.C. itself is 700,000, 800,000, plus if you count Northern Virginia's, the suburbs that ring it, 3.1 million just right there, right around D.C., just from the Virginia side of it. I would wonder if Maryland adds another couple million. You're talking about a region of 6 million people with one newspaper. Richmond, you know, the five counties surrounding Richmond and then Richmond itself, you know, population easily of a million with one daily newspaper. With the merger of the Virginian Pilot and the Newport News Daily Press, Hampton Roads has one daily newspaper. Hampton Roads, another place with a couple million residents, one daily newspaper. Stanton Waynesboro has two. I mean, so it's just odd. It's just an odd accident of history that this market supports two daily papers. So that's odd in itself. And then here the you know, with, you know, long-term trends and short-term trends. Long-term trends are daily papers dying every day, no matter what. And then you have the specificity of circumstances involving COVID and what the economy is doing in the COVID era. And then here's little Augusta Free Press, and what's the future for both, you know, newspapers in general, newspapers in our market in particular, and then what does that mean for people like me, Augusta Free Press, and others out there like us? I'll start with the newspapers in general. The long-term trends are just not good, and they haven't been for a long time, so that's not anything new. But you know, I'll call them the legacy media. The legacy media, legacy print media, has a lot of expenses that I don't have. I don't have to worry about a printing press. I don't have to worry about printing magazines or papers, distributing them afterwards, and then, you know, having all the support staff to even just pay the bills to break even. And then have all the people that you need to fill up the content in a good way. You know, when you look at how newspapers are produced now, especially, you know, we have friends who work in the local media whose jobs are being downsized. It seems like every day, not quite every day, because that would mean that, you know, eventually there'd be zero, and there's still just a few. But you know, the copy desk that used to be in the newsroom. Then they started, you know, now they're not here in Waynesboro or Stanton. Now they're in some regional hub, maybe in Lynchburg or maybe in Tennessee. And now they're even further spread out. Now, you know, the copy desks are being so centralized that there's maybe one or two national copy desks that produce the local papers across the country. And you slap dash it out every day. I mean, you think about how many papers these chains have. And so, you know, there's skeleton staffs. I mean, when I worked at the News Virginian had its own building. It wasn't a huge building, but it was a good sized building. And we probably had 100 people working in there. And now the News Virginian is basically working out of a three room suite in a former like medical office type situation across the street from a fast food place. I mean, and you know, the News Leader, dates back to the early years of the 20th century and had its own huge building in downtown Stanton, which it, I think I have these details right. They sold and they're leasing back some space in the building that they sold, with a small staff. And, in the COVID era, a lot of that work's being done at home. You know, the reporters are working at home and making phone calls and sending the stories, and, you know, you don't need the building anymore, I guess, is the thing, but you still have to pay the bills, and you have to pay the printer, and you have to, you know, still pay the people to deliver the paper, and all that's done. And I remember having this epiphany probably back in 97 or 98 when we finally, it was 98, because when the News Virginian went from being an afternoon paper, which meant we published late morning, to being a morning paper, which meant we published late night, I was on the team that would, you know, be proofing the paper at night at 11 o'clock, midnight, whenever it was. And it hit me one night when I was looking over pages down in the press room, making sure, you know, whatever, that things were spelled right and everything else. that as soon as they hit the button and started running the presses, this is already old news. Because at 11:30, whatever time it might be that night, that the or 12 o'clock, whatever time it might be that night, that the presses started running, stuff was still happening. Further information could be gleaned and updated, you know, because, and it was maybe because I had worked in that environment where we had been the afternoon paper, then we went to being the morning paper. And, you know, one thing being the afternoon paper meant we got to the office at 7 a.m. and we had 3 hours to, like, the news leader published, you know, they were already sitting on our desk when we got to our office, and we knew what had happened the night before, maybe at a city council meeting or at the football game, whatever else. But, you know, they had to kind of crank it out, and we had some time to digest it and maybe make a follow-up phone call. Hey, what happened with this? Did I have this right? Is there anything more to this part of the story? This kid who got injured, is he okay? Is he, you know, going to be out for a while, et cetera? And we had more time to develop the information. That was our advantage. Their advantage was they were first. Our advantage was we were more thorough. And then, you know, then when we went to be on the same schedule that they were, it hit me again, like, yeah, we don't come out again until tomorrow night. And so, whereas an internet, you know, a website can be updated minute by minute. And so, that's the issue that's there now for print in the legacy media. You know, you're spending a lot of money and time and expense and effort and thought and everything else to the print side of things that, I mean, honestly, I haven't read a print newspaper in years, and I look at news all the time. I'm consuming news quite regularly, but I don't look at print at all. And so, what good, you know, all this effort just to maintain something because you're supposed to maintain it, because you're supposed to have still a print newspaper. You know, there had been a couple of efforts in the last 10 years or so where, two different community group type efforts were initiated to try to buy the local paper. Hey, you know, it's for sale, and, you know, various companies are trying to, you know, get rid of the paper, maybe close the paper down, whatever. And we're going to be civic minded and we're going to buy it, but we don't know how to run a paper. So maybe Chris and Crystal, would you like to be involved? And, you know, my way of thinking was, and I explained this to the two different groups, Crystal and I did, first thing we would do is stop printing the paper and put the resources that are spent, wasted in our opinions, on print and pursuing print into more reporters to report more news and then get it out on the internet better. And of course, that answer didn't work well with folks. Why would you buy a paper and then stop printing the paper? You know, but the reason being that it's old hat. You know, there's a reason we don't make vinyl records anymore. There's a better way to deliver music than there was with vinyl records. There, you know, there's reasons you do certain things, and so. That's the long-term trend for newspapers. The short-term trend is difficult too. I mean, the short-term trend for news is, you know, newspapers, legacy newspapers. And I would even throw in radio and TV into this at this stage. Radio has issues because, you know, the all news format is tough, and not a lot of folks do it. You know, the all news format tends to be news talk, and news talk has been replaced by podcasts, like things like this. Again, news is minute by minute, and so, you know, having, you know, unless you have a great website, there's no sense in news over the air. And then music is completely, I mean, gosh, with XM and Sirius and your ability to have the Amazon app or Spotify or the various things, Slacker and things like that. You can create your own radio stations. Why do you want to listen to something over the air? And then the advertising, you know, as advertisers realize that people are doing their own things, but be it XM Sirius or the music apps or whatever the case may be. You know, what's the value of radio from that standpoint? And then TV, really, you know, TV, it's same way. I mean, you can binge watch what you want, when you want. You know, from a news standpoint, the nightly news is sort of like the daily newspaper. You know, the 6:30 nightly news used to be the highest rated thing on TV because you had to watch the nightly news, find out what's going on in the world. Now it's a news magazine as well. And I can't tell you the last time I watched nightly news. I bet I've read a newspaper since the last time I watched nightly news. And so, you know, the local TV news still has value. I know from looking at TV ratings, local TV ratings, but even that's going to, you know, erode even more as time goes on. It's the heyday of local TV. That 6 o'clock local TV news, the heyday is 10 years ago at least. And it's only going to get more pronounced in that sense. Now the short term, you know, we're in this COVID era and it's going to end at some point. Might be a month or two. It might be a few months. It might be early next year, but at some point this will end. And we'll get to whatever that normal is afterwards. And I think it'll be very similar to the previous normal, but with the knowledge we've gained in the last few months in terms of how we consume various things. But in the meantime, we're in the era that we're in. And we're finding out that news is, especially news, is only as good as the ability for the news to be able to generate money. And so getting the clicks on news, getting people to watch reports or listen to reports or read reports, whatever the case may be, people need news. I mean, they need it more now than ever, but it's also because it's a presidential election year. You know, there's various things. People just need stuff all the time. Whether it's a presidential election year or a pandemic or whatever else, you know, you want to know what's going on in the world. Weather, if nothing else, you want to find out about the weather. And the issue, though, is that, you know, people watching or listening or clicking or reading whatever they're doing, doesn't mean anything if there's not money to be made from the enterprise, you know. And you know, money is usually, I mean, this is just the way we've done things here in America. It's advertising, you know. So we draw eyeballs. That's what, you know, Gustav Free Press does this. NBC does this. CNN does this. ESPN does this. We have New York Times. We all generate eyeballs. And then there's advertising messages, you know, on TV, you have commercial breaks, radio, you have commercial breaks, in news, whether it's print or online, there's ads on one side, there's ads on the other, there's ads in the middle, there's ads everywhere. And then, you know, you either pay-per-click or pay-per-impression, you know, whatever the case may be. But in this COVID era, this short term where we are now, people don't want to shop for local news. People are they're not wanting to go out, not as many anyway, don't want to go out and shop local. They don't want to go to local restaurants. They can't go to local entertainment venues. They're not open. And so for local news, for a News Virginian, for a news leader, for a Daily Progress, for WVIR or WHSV, the businesses that would write you big checks every month, every quarter, every year, so that they could use your eyeballs to get their message out about come eat at Joe's, come buy pants here, you know, get your hat here, get your air conditioning service here. You know, right now, people are, when they're buying stuff, not, I shouldn't say people, more than certainly back in early March, are getting it delivered to their door by Amazon. And Amazon doesn't need the News Virginian. Amazon doesn't need the News Leader or Channel 29 or Channel 3 or Q101 or WSVA. They don't, WINA in Charlottesville. They don't need them. They're all over the place. They don't need to give those folks money. And so just as many people are reading, maybe even more are reading local news, watching local news on TV, listening to local news on a radio. But the money's not there to support it because, you know, the money's being spent. You still need stuff. You still need, you know, groceries. You still need, you know, new whatever, you know. But you're getting it delivered to your door. And that's generally being done off, you know, by the bigger companies, the Amazons, the, you know, the FedEx guys and UPS guys are now your best friends, not the, the local butcher, the person who folds sweaters at the Kohl's down the street. You know, you don't see those folks. You haven't seen those folks. At least, you know, more people haven't. And so, you know, that's exposed a hole in the business. I mean, we are working harder to get people to read, and people are reading, and, you know, the legacy media is having trouble, you know, translating that into dollars. We're fortunate at Augusta Free Press that, you know, we have a good mix of advertisers that we've never really relied for, you know, it didn't evolve this way in a great way for us. For the first few years, we would have loved to have had the retail business, but we didn't have a success getting the retail folks locally and regionally to advertise with us. But, you know, the business to business folks, the healthcare folks that have been with us from the beginning are still with us, and they're always going to need business, and they're always seeking new eyeballs. And so we've actually had the last 4 months have been, if not our most successful 4 months, among our top two most successful 4 months that we've ever had. And we're also a small staff. I mean, it's a full-time staff of two. We have, you know, several contributors and such, but we don't have high overhead. And so I think that, you know, I mean, a lot's going to change about this world, as I guess we'll start summing things up here. I've, you know, kind of giving you the history of AFP from, you know, starting as something that we thought was going to be another legacy media, another print media source, and how we evolved out of necessity as an online source, and had to be creative in how we generated revenue and eventually figured that out and got better and better every quarter, every year. I think that the future of media is lots of Augusta Free Press type ventures. I really do. You know, I think that maybe not as small. I mean, in a sense of small, you know, Augusta Free Press lives through my fingertips and my wife's fingertips and our keyboards. You know, maybe a few people in places are working together, but, you know, small and decentralized, I think, is sort of the future of the media. You know, I don't know that there's an advantage to having a newsroom where people meet. We've learned in the last few months that we can have meetings virtually on Zoom, and I'm sure there are other apps that are used, but Zoom is the one that we use and lots of folks use, and you certainly know the brand name. But we can have those meetings that way. We can coordinate that way. I've coordinated, honestly, I mean, for years, just by email and phone calls, and now Zoom makes it even easier. You can actually look at a person. You can have you can have a meeting that feels like a meeting without having to be in a place where you pay rent and, you know, have to pay insurance for, you know, the stuff you have in your building and everything else. And so it feels like that's going to be something that comes out of this, is that, you know, bigger isn't better. Smaller is better. There are still there can be a lot of talented people out of work. I know just locally quite a few talented journalists who don't have work, and you know, have skill sets that need to be utilized. And so, you know, the more entrepreneurial amongst them, you know, like us, I never thought of myself as entrepreneurial, but we out of necessity became entrepreneurial. But the more entrepreneurial among them will be the leaders, and then, you know, they'll bring their the ones who are maybe less entrepreneurial but still you know, want to work in the business. There's talent out there that can be marshaled, and there's certainly people starving for information and well produced accurate information, professionally done information. You know, it's not as easy as you can just start your own publication and have it be respected. I mean, you have to, you know, there's definitely a need for some standardization, but, you know, does it have to have the price tag of renting the building, owning a building, leasing a building, whatever the case may be, having access to a printing press? You don't need a printing press. The web is the printing press. you don't need the print anymore. You can be smart using the social media to amplify your message, get eyeballs back to your website, which is where you make money. I don't make money on Twitter. I don't make money on Facebook. I use those to get people to my website, which is where then if you read my story on my website, and you're looking at ads on my website, both the display ads and also the pay-per-click and pay-per-impression ads, that's where I make my money. I don't make money. Jack Dorsey makes money on Twitter. Mark Zuckerberg makes money on Facebook. I don't make money there. And so I don't play games there. You know, we post stuff to those websites, but it's not our bread and butter. They're means to an end, and the end is to get you to Augusta Free Press. And then hopefully if you come back, you know, on a regular basis, then that helps generate eyeballs, which generates revenue for us. And so, I mean, I've been saying this since 2002 that, you know, as soon as we started realizing, maybe it was 2003, when we started realizing, that we were maybe on the cutting edge of something, we didn't realize it at the very beginning. We certainly started realizing, hey, you know, maybe there's a future in this for things, that, you know, I read something, for example, a friend of mine tweeted out about how I think it's the state of Wyoming now has no daily newspapers, no print daily newspapers anymore. I mean, that's, you know, and this person is the friend of mine who works in print newspapers. But there's still news. There's still a need in Wyoming, well-produced, news stories, information about what's going on in Wyoming, whether it be the local level, state level, federal level impacting Wyoming, the local sports scene. You know, there's desire from people who live there for information. There are people, no doubt, who live there who have the ability to produce that information. The fact that it's not in print's not the big deal. The big deal is that, you know, you need to figure out the new ways. And I think it's going to happen. I mean, I think the history of Augusta Free Press shows that it can happen. You know, our road was a bumpy one. We lived our first 5 years of this venture in a trailer park because we had to be cheap because we couldn't get anybody to buy into the idea of what we were doing. Couldn't get any investors. It worked out great for us. It turned out that we didn't need investors. I'm glad we didn't have them because then we could pursue what we wanted to do without having someone tell us how to do it that maybe didn't know what they were doing. I mean, literally, I'm broadcasting from this podcast studio. It's my first broadcast in a new home that we purchased. I lived, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, as I'm not, but, you know, we lived in a trailer park for 5 years, and now I live in a home in the country club section of Waynesboro. We've done well for ourselves. We worked really hard, and we continue to work hard. We're always going to work hard. But, we worked smart, and we got here. And, you know, I'd like to think that we're not special. I like to think that because I think that there are lots of people out there that can do what we're doing in every community in this country. Every, you know, Waynesboro is a population of 21,000. Stanton nearby is 25. Charlottesville's 47, 48, I think, just over the mountain from us. Harrisburg up the road from us is 45 to 50. I'd like to think that there's at least one and maybe more in each of those communities, groups of people that can do what we do. I think that's the future of the media, quite honestly. I really do. I know that there's a lot of gloom and doom in general right now in our country, and in the Western world, with COVID, with the presidential election, the uncertainties of all this going on right now. Maybe it's because of where I come from. You know, not only did I live in the trailer park when we started Augusta Free Press, I grew up in a single parent home in a trailer park. I mean, I've always said that you don't get out of the trailer park with a negative attitude. You don't escape difficult situations and survive with a negative attitude. That these things are too big, we can't get them done. You do not overcome those circumstances with a negative attitude. I think that we're going to come through this, you know, metaphorically as a country, but also the media business is going to come through this and be better on the other side. Maybe Augusta Free Press is a tale. Maybe we're an example of how it's done and can be done. I hope that's the case. So that is my TED Talk for the day. please offer your comments, criticisms, constructive criticisms, attaboys, whatever the case may be. This particular podcast slash broadcast slash whatever is going to appear on Facebook. It'll appear on YouTube. It'll appear on our Podbean page. It'll appear on our website at sfreepress.com. All of those have comment sections. I monitor them all regularly. I'm sure we'll tweet about it as well, LinkedIn. So anyway, I hope we can start a discussion here. And I hope it's a positive one that we can all grow from. I hope it's not one of those where people just start yelling at each other. I had one of those this weekend. Lost a friend of 30 plus years because this friend decided to use the conversation as a bludgeon. I don't want that to be the case with this or any other discussions that we're in. I'd rather our discussions be productive. But please, just feel free to comment on all those different venues. The internet's here. We can use it for good, or we can use it for what we have been using it for, which is to smack each other around. But yeah, let's use it for positive. So thank you for joining in today. Really appreciate your staying to the end of this. I do. And hopefully this has been enlightening in some way. I know it's been for me, if nothing else, just getting all this information out has been very helpful to me. So on behalf of my wife, Crystal, who allows me to sit up here in my podcast room for an hour and talk to myself, and for all those who are fans of Augusta Repress, thank you for your time today, and we will talk again soon.